This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
4, 3, 2, 1.
It's time to tee it high and let it fly. On the Tee, Florida.
You're playing golf and you're going to like it.
On the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the 19th Hole Studios inside Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill.
How about a fresca?
Bringing you the week's coverage of all things golf. From the PGA and LPGA to the NCAA and LIV.
We're waiting.
And now.
Your Honor.
Let's tee off with two pros and a hack. PGA professionals John Rager and Bill Buttner, and your host Mike Rickard, along with the entertainment squad, a colorful cast of characters.
You want to make $14 the hard way?
Now, everyone back up. Here's Mike Rickard.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connections on the Tee, Florida, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, our 19th hole clubhouse studios. We're situated down on the lower unit. We've got two golf simulators, full swing golf simulators here. One upstairs, one downstairs, and they're for rent any day, any morning, any time. And we're looking forward to expanding our league activity. Brought to you by our good friends at Michelob Ultra. And John Rager is the coordinator of that. I'm the facilitator down here. And across from me is Bobby Van Sweden. Appreciate him taking time to come down and join us. Tom Gribben just left the house. Of course, he's our resident attorney, author, promoter. And he's going to he's heading home and getting himself ready for a little knee surgery. So we'll be talking to him a little bit later on. And then, of course, your friend, Bill Buttner, as you know, I told him you were coming on, and he dogged you for some women.
Well, you know, that's Billy.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's how the ladies love him out there. And then, of course, John Rager up there at St. Augustine Beach. And nice conversation, first hour, Michael Furr, and, of course, Ward Clayton there, John. Always interesting to see what's going on in the world of Michael Furr and his traveling roadshow, his entertainment that he brings to charitable events. And I think it'd be a home run if we could get him out to the Sea Dogs Invitational and have some fun with him as well.
Hey, Mike, we've got the Masters on our minds, so here we go. Four, please. Bobby Van Sweden, now driving.
Have your past met yet? Have you met John?
No. No, not personally.
I didn't know if he was one of his trips down from St. Augustine.
No.
But, yeah, and in fact, I met you through Bill Buttner.
Right.
And then we found out, you know, you were Boca Ciega Pirate. Yep. And my girlfriend and the families had a lot in common. And, of course, you're a big supporter of high school sports with your son being up there at Northside Christian.
Yeah.
I liked your traveling roadshow stories.
Sure, everybody loves the stories of me back on the road with rock bands.
Well, you know, those are interesting stories.
Sure.
But what you've done for 30 years couldn't be more far remote from the world of rock and roll and craziness to the calm and consistent world of golf.
I don't know if it's calm and consistent when you're out on the PGA Tour working in the trucks, but yeah, it's. It's good. I enjoy it.
Well,
hey, Bobby,
I got a question for you.
So, yeah, we're one of the few radio broadcasts out there about golf that has our own golf weatherman, Wild Bill Stereau. And the past year or so, he gave me this wedge, and it was a 69-degree wedge.
Oh, yeah.
And I went ahead and I hit it, and I almost hit myself on the forehead when I was coming through.
Yeah.
So how much loft... how much loft can you possibly have on a golf club around the green? What is too much loft? I mean, is there a standard to that, or is it something that maybe I just don't have any skill, or and I can't hit a 69-degree wedge very well? So what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think 69 is a little excessive. I mean, you know, you're going to literally pop it straight up. I mean, you'd be lucky if it goes 10 feet, you know, but 62 is really pushing it, but you know, typically a lob wedge is between 58 and 60 degrees, you know, and that's just enough to get the ball high enough to drop onto the green at a short distance and hold and bite on the green where you're trying to hit it to.
Well, you know, how many wedges should you have in a bag then? You know, I'm talking average golfer, not tour pros and stuff like that, but just an average golfer. You know, for our listeners out there, sometimes you know we all want to have a set of wedges that can handle the short game because that's where it's at anyway to lower your scores the fastest at chipping and putting. But what do you recommend to have for the average golfer? I know the answer has got to be more than one wedge. It can't be five wedges because you have some other clubs you got to get rid of.
No, it can be five. Trust me, it's five.
Five wedges.
A lot of times it's five wedges now because the OEM manufacturers have been slowly over the years strengthening the loft of the set of irons. So your average game improvement pitching wedge now is up to 41 degrees. That's like a soft 8-iron loft now. So you literally have to have a 45-degree approach wedge, a 50 to 52-degree gap wedge, a 54 to 55 or 56 sand wedge, and then you have either a 58 or a 60 and lob. I mean, you can carry 4 to 5 wedges in your bag now because of how the manufacturers are strengthening the loft so much. If you don't have those two gap wedges in your bag, you're going to have a 40, 50 yard gap in your game for a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the old school way used to be, you used to take a club and you'd hood it down a little bit, or you'd put your hands a little far forward, or you'd, you know, get it up in your stance and try to loft it. You know, I remember those days of even Seve would be able to take a 4-iron and hit it out of a bunker, you know, a bunker blast. So, but at the same time, you know, for the average golfer, they don't have the time to practice. So you don't have the skill set.
They don't have the tempo, the skill set like the better players do. You know, I'm a big believer that we need to make the game fun and enjoyable for the average player because the average player is what keeps the industry going. And if we make the game,
you're talking about hacks like me.
All of us. You know, if we make the game too difficult, people are going to stop playing, and then the manufacturers can't afford the big $3 million tour trucks out there every week. They can't afford to pay the tour players sponsorship money. You know, I mean, really the consumer is what drives the PGA, the LPGA, the senior tour. The equipment that the consumer buys is what drives everything. So we have to make it enjoyable, more easier for them. And let's be honest, man. I mean, everybody that's, you know, not a 5 or better handicap player, they want to play like they're a 5 handicap player. And we've got to be able to make equipment easier for them. And the manufacturers, you know, United States Golf Association is making it much harder for the manufacturers, you know, putting restrictions on so much stuff with equipment now that the only way that they can sell a lot of equipment is strengthening the lofts and getting more distance for people. You know, now AI has come into play with so much stuff over the last 2 years. I mean, now we've got AI, you know, developing everything from driver down to putters with Callaway right now. Callaway spent a fortune 5 years ago on a monster master AI computer, and they've been designing equipment now using artificial intelligence to, you know, because that computer can run so many scenarios.
And diagnostics on an individual or
the equipment, like different scenarios of sweet spots and points of core of restitution and moment of inertia, and it can run it so fast that they can run cycles in that computer and simulate what is going to be the best option for the average player. You know, the average player doesn't break over 100.
Oh, no, 10%.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I think the greatest club that was ever invented was the double-sided chipper club. It had like a putter lie.
I got one in my bag upstairs here in my office. I swear to God, I got a double chipper.
You mean the Texas wedge?
That's the greatest club ever invented. You know, it was all poo-pooed because it wasn't legal according to the USGA. But, you know, most golfers don't have golf handicaps, and they're not playing in tournaments. And, you know, it's something that, to me, I mean, to me, the chipper may be the greatest golf club ever designed.
Yeah,
I love
the double-sided chipper.
Yeah. Can you buy them anymore? They still have them?
Oh yeah, you can buy them. I mean, you know, I don't stock them because I really don't stock anything in the shop because everything is custom ordered.
Gotcha.
You know, so we have a lot of demos, but I don't really carry the chippers. But I can certainly order them for anybody from a couple of companies that I have.
Let's back up for a minute. Introduce the company, how people do business with you, because you just mentioned something I didn't realize, that everything you do is, I know it's customized.
Right.
But then you do not direct them to go out and buy their own clubs. You assist them in that process, right?
Right. So, you know, people...
Yeah, talk about how you got into the business and the 3 decades that you have of success, and obviously in this area, including, you know, name dropping, John Daly's of the world. I'll respect your expertise and what you've done.
Yeah. You know, I started 30 years ago, started out just doing club repair. And then I got to the point where I was working at a driving range. I leased the pro shop from a driving range. It used to be in Largo called Missing Links. That allowed me to open up manufacturer accounts because it was considered a greengrass account. And so I basically started doing club fitting at that point. And that's when I started to evolve and started winning a lot of awards for club fitting over the years. And it's just, you know, elevated to where I'm at now, which is I feel comfortable now, 30 years later, being able to say I am a master club fitter. I am a master club builder now because I've got 30 years building and fitting clubs. I never felt comfortable with that title for 20 of the 30 years, but the last 10 years I feel comfortable, you know, people saying that or me telling people that. So
now, do you make recommendations to the respective manufacturers?
I've been on advisory boards. Gotcha. I was on the custom fitting advisory board for TaylorMade for a few years. I was on the advisory board for KBS Shaft Company. I actually came up with the concept and I did all the prototype testing for their 580 and 560 junior steel shaft. I went to Kim Braley, when we were on tour and said, you know, nobody has developed a steel shaft for juniors so that you can build adult clubs for them to play, because a lot of kids, they don't want to play U.S. kids and they don't want to play junior clubs. They want to play
the real thing. They
want to play the real thing. So we me and Kim developed that shaft, and it's won like over 350 junior championships and tournaments over the last 5 years since they designed it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, bravo, my man.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get a lot of credit for it, but you know, I did help with the concept of it, and I'm proud of that. It's a little thumbprint that I can put on in the golf industry that I helped develop that.
Hey, Bobby, I have a question for you. I've been doing a lot of research and development trying to figure out this AI, and I see a lot of apps out there now where you send a video in and AI will diagnose your swing. And I was over at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and MasterCard had one of those that they would put people on to, you know, take a video, and then all of a sudden an AI golf instructor would kind of give you, some tips and stuff. It was, you know, pretty scaled down just for the average golfer. Do you think that's the wave of the future where somebody will come into your shop and you can actually take a video?
I think that is the case. I hope it doesn't ever happen because it's going to put a lot of shops out of business. It's going to put a lot of teaching pros out of business. And, you know, we need to support the PGA of America. We need to keep teaching pros on the tee, giving lessons instead of people doing it with AI. But I think our entire world is going to be artificial intelligence, you know, in the next 20 to 30 years. We're not going to be able to stop this. It's too big of a boulder going down the hill.
I'm glad that I am the age, the very few times I say that I'm glad I am the age that I am. Yeah. But when I see, you know, the evolution of AI and its role in the world, it scares me to death.
Yeah.
And
Texas Open, Texas Valero Open, Roy McIlroy talked about him hooking back up with Butch Harmon. And Butch is not his main golf instructor, but Butch was somebody that, you know, Roy would fall back on. And he wasn't talking about the X's and O's and the aspects of his golf swing. Butch was just more of a coach, just talking about, you know, just different things from a artistic standpoint, not a technical standpoint. So I think that's one thing that AI just may not be able to do is replace that type of element of the coaching of in the psychology of working with the golfer versus the technical aspects of swing playing and all that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, guys like Butch and Hank Haney and David Ledbetter, the reason they are who they are is it's not their technical knowledge as much as it is
their delivery,
their psychological knowledge, the ability to read a player and be able to connect with that player on their mindset level and give them options and be able to let them see another side of their game that they might not have thought about, you know, mentoring. Basically, those guys are really mentors to those tour players, and that's why, you know.
And these are guys with enormous egos, so you have to be superb at being able to read that as well, right?
100%. You know, I mean, the first year that I was out there working on the tour, it was a bit of an adjustment, you know, because you're dealing with, I mean, bigger egos than some of the rock bands I worked for. I mean, some of these guys are
prima donnas.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, as long as you know that you're a servant and that you're there to serve them, which is what you do. As a tour rep or as a tour technician, you're there to help them to advance to be able to win money. And there's a lot of pressure on the truck.
Is there appreciation, though?
To a point, yeah. But, you know, I always jokingly say, you know, a tour player blames two people on Sunday when he doesn't win. It's either the caddy or the guys in the truck.
The equipment guys.
Yeah, the equipment guys, you know. It's never them. It's never their swing. It's always either the caddy or the equipment guys. But, you know, there's some great guys out there. I mean, you know, Ryan Palmer is one of my favorites. Dustin Johnson's just a great guy.
DJ is?
Yeah. Zach Johnson's awesome.
I'm glad to hear that because I've had a lot of personal interaction. I love
Zach. There's a lot of guys that are really good. You know the good guys because they'll come in the truck, you know, 10:30, 10 o'clock. Hey, what do you guys want for lunch today? And then they'll go.
They'll ask you guys?
Yeah, they'll either go get it themselves or they'll go get their caddy to go get it, and then they'll bring food to us. Because a lot of times, man, we're so busy in the truck, especially Tuesday is the busiest day for doing repair work in the truck. And you don't have time to eat. So a lot of times, you know, we're blessed that either the caddies or the players will go get us lunch.
So how does this process start? So Zach Johnson shows up at the Valero, Texas, and you're down there. He has an issue with the equipment, and it comes to you?
First thing we're going to do is check lofts and lies. I mean, that's one of the things we do the most is checking lofts and lies for players.
Explain that.
Well, we put them on a loft and lie machine, and we have a database with every player that we work with in the truck, and we're able to say, okay, well, this is what the loft should be on this iron, and this is what the lie angle, and you put it into the digital loft and lie machine because it's a very accurate machine. And you're able to see that it is that. And if it's not, then you correct it and you bend it to that spec. That and a lot of regripping. You know, because everything's free out there. Hey, why not change my grips every 2 weeks? Why not, you know, change my putter grip every week?
My God, they get down to the gnat's ass, don't they, John Rager?
Well, it is interesting. Yeah, I can tell you, Bobby, that are there tour pros out there that they come in. And for example, I remember as a young golf professional, I ran into a Canadian golf professional named Al Balding, and he was famous at his time in 50s and 60s, early 70s or so around that time, and he taught me how to bend a club by taking a bowling ball, not a bowling ball, but a bowling pin that you find at a bowling alley, and I had a lie and loft machine there, and he came to me and he goes, hey, you know, my 7-iron's a little off here. You know, and I said, yeah, well, okay, let me put it in the lie and loft machine. He goes, well, wait a sec, I'll show you what I'm talking about. So he takes his 7-iron out, and he starts smashing it against this bowling pin. And he says, oh, that's X amount of degrees. And I put it on the lie and loft machine, and there it was. But in those days, golf clubs were so pliable, you could bang them on the sidewalk and change the, you know, the lie of the club and that kind of stuff.
So there's an old story about Ben Hogan. He had a 2-iron that was his favorite, and he could bang it against a tree stump and change the loft how he wanted it to be because it was so pliable and soft enough to do that, or he'd whack it up or down to change the lie angle. I heard that story many times from some of the old tour trailer guys that used to work back then.
Think about what those guys would do with today's technology in their hands.
Yeah, I mean, those guys had such great feel. Players don't have the feel that the old guys had.
Or shot making.
I mean, you know, when you think about how they won the Masters and the U.S. Open and the British back then with the medieval golf equipment that they had.
Medieval.
Persimmon woods and Balata balls and blades. I mean, the first cavity back that ever came out was from Solheim Carson with Ping. You know, I mean, that was in the 80s. So, I mean, before that, everyone played blades. And there's so
there was a level playing field, definitely.
For the most part, yeah, yeah, it was. I mean, you know, and for many years, graphite shafts were so inconsistent. They couldn't get graphite to be consistent enough. Now it's so precise and so consistent. You know, you can throw a set of graphites on a frequency analyzer and you can dial them in very, very quickly. And the weight sorting of the shafts are done at the factory very, very precisely.
You're listening on the T Florida. We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, our 19th hole clubhouse studios, brought to you by our good friends at Ice Pick Vodka, Sea Dogs Brewery. I was there today for a wonderful lunch with Fred Forsley, doing some planning for the future. In fact, big plans for this show, and I'll share those in a couple of weeks. Some breaking announcements, adding another state to our reach, and maybe a little colder climate. I'll just give you a little some teasers from that respect, and some of the other moves that we're going to be making with this production. John Rager's up there at St. Augustine Beach. Very interesting conversation with Bobby Van Sweden and Bill Butner not here in the house. He's partying it up at St. Pete Country Club, and I guess my question is, and that's tough for you guys that in that business. You're almost an independent consultant.
Yeah.
Relative to which manufacturer they go and buy their equipment from.
Well, you know,
do you strongly suggest equipment because you know that
shop? Yes.
Yes, in your shop.
When you're out in the truck, you know, you're suggesting whatever company you're working for.
Gotcha.
You know. But yeah, in my shop, I mean, I really try to pride myself on being the most unbiased,
objective,
and I'm not on staff with any company. I don't take the spiff money that companies offer to incentivize, you know, golf shops to sell their products. I want my fittings to be the most unbiased. Whatever the launch monitor tells us is the best performing head and shaft, that's what I'm going to recommend. The data that I see is exactly the same data that my customer sees at the time that he's hitting. So there's no way for me to fudge the numbers or try to entice him to play something else because I'm getting $50 for that driver on the back end. You know, there's a lot
of. Do you think you could take your attitude and your business philosophy to the doctors of America?
Yeah.
relative to Big Pharma?
No. You know, I.
Well, bravo for you, man.
I can make a lot more money if I didn't have the morals that I have about the industry. I mean, a lot of people in the industry, man, they kind of
sharks.
Well, they kind of chuckle and laugh at me because they're like, dude, you're throwing money away. I said, no.
I look myself in the mirror at night.
What I'm doing is I tell them, I say, I don't want a customer one time. I want a customer for 10 years. I don't care if somebody comes to my shop and they drill me for free advice 5-6 times. If I give them that advice, they're probably going to tell 5 or 6 friends that come see me, and eventually they're going to come in and buy something from me. And I've proven that year after year after year. I'm really proud. You know, my Google reviews are off the chart. I mean, I don't have anything. I have 537 5-star reviews on Google right now. There's not a single 4, 3, or 2, or 1.
Bravo, man.
Because we take care of the client, and they know that I'm there to try and help them be the best player they can. I had a guy in today. I could not help him with his game fitting him wise. And I'm like, look, your mechanics are really off. You've got to go get some swing analysis from a PGA teaching pro, then come back and see me in 4 to 6 weeks and we'll reevaluate you. And the guy appreciated that because I was honest. You know, if you're honest, you know, people will come back and work with you.
Hey, John Rager, you think if I came to you or Bill Butner, that you'd even give me the time of day and then you send him to Bobby? Do you think there'd be any chance in God's great earth that we could do anything with my game?
Well, you know, my club fitting is a partnership between the Bobby Van Swedens of the world and the PGA Golf Professional, because the PGA Golf Professional is going to focus on the mentoring aspect of it and the coaching aspect of it, and will recognize the fact that some of their mechanics aren't suited to what they're trying to do, and they need to improve on that before they go and invest in a set of golf clubs. But what Bobby's doing is it's called player retention, because you're more apt if you buy a set of golf clubs from Bobby and they're fitted properly and you've had a few lessons and your mechanics are there, you're still going to be playing golf 10 years from now. where if you just take something off the rack and you don't take any golf lessons and you don't have any understanding of mechanics or the psychological aspect of playing the game of golf, and then you have a set of golf clubs that don't fit, you'll see it on Facebook Marketplace 2 years from now. They gave up the game totally because they can't figure it out. So it's a great partnership that Bobby has with the local PGA golf professionals, because, you know, at a golf shop, normally at a golf course, you don't have the ability to stock the inventory. And plus, unless you invest the time and effort and experience in club fitting, because it's a separate profession in itself, you're just not going to be very good at it. So, you know, hats off to Bobby and what you're doing.
Thanks.
Because what you're doing is the supreme way that you can grow the game of golf is get people to play, but also get people to stay playing.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, the problem with the big box stores is, you know, they don't want you to walk out the door unless you buy something, and they don't want you to get better. They want you to get a little bit better, but not good enough that you're not coming in next year to buy the latest product again. I don't see...
The whole industry is expecting that, right?
The average customer that I fit for a set of irons, I literally don't see them for 7 to 10 years for another set of irons. So I have to rely that I do such a good job with them that they're going to tell 20 people over a 7 to 10 year period, hey, go see my guy.
Well, with 5-star reviews, it's not tough to recommend you, my friend. We need to get some swag that's got 5-star.
Yeah.
Be a cool logo for them, wouldn't it, John?
Well, it might be the difference. Here's an analogy I have. It's like, it's the difference between buying a Yugo and maybe buying a Mercedes or something.
Yugo. You know, it's just, where'd you pull that out of your yin yang?
Well, you remember, Yugo. People bought Nobody those Yugos, they were pretty the cheap, and they only did last a year, you know. And but yeah, if you have a Mercedes, yeah, 30 years later, you can still have a Mercedes.
Yugo.
Right.
Hey, let's talk about, we were up there, we did our broadcast live from the Valspar and had a wonderful time, thanks to our good friends at Michelob Ultra. And and I didn't know this, and you know, I don't know a lot, obviously. I didn't know that you were in the truck up there.
Yeah.
But you were in the truck on Monday and Tuesday.
Monday, Tuesday,
and
Wednesday. Yeah, so the PGA Tour only allows manufacturers and the representatives.
Because I was looking for you.
Yeah. They only allow us to be out there Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. You have to be off property by 7, 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. Your trucks have to be gone, or you start getting fined. So the only event that you could, if you wanted to stay all week, is the Masters, because no one is allowed to park their vehicles on the Masters. So you park it across the street over by the Hooters.
Over by Johnny Daly and his right. Hooters truck?
So all the manufacturer trucks are over there. So if they wanted to, they could stay the whole week, because it's not that big of a trip to get up to Hilton Head from Augusta. So a lot of the manufacturers, they'll stay with the trucks all the way until Sunday, just in case someone needs something done. The players can get in the courtesy car, drive across the street, go in the truck, and get their stuff worked on.
And tell our audience why they instituted that rule.
Well, they don't want manufacturers and their reps to solicit players and try to get them testing stuff and trying stuff on the range once the tournament starts. They want the players to be able to focus on what's at hand, and that's playing the tournament, which I agree with 100%, you know. We normally set the trucks up on a Sunday. Sometimes the drivers will get in midweek and set the truck up at the next event, and then they'll fly home for a few days and then fly back on Sunday. And then Monday morning, 6 a.m., we turn the generators on, the lights on. We open up the pop-up sides and everything to the truck and get everything ready. By about 7 o'clock in the morning, the first caddy or the first player is walking in the door wanting stuff done.
Well, I'm certain that you thoroughly enjoy that opportunity to get outside the shop. And
I do. It's fun. It's educational for me. I really believe that the education that I have has been on the tour, you know, learning from all the guys that are out there all the time, learning from the engineers. The manufacturer engineers will come out when we're prototyping stuff. They'll come out for that week, and you can really, they'll work with you and explain how they engineered this, how they designed it, so that you're better educated to talk to the player when they're asking you questions. So it's a real education being out on the tour, but it's also a pressure cooker, because we're talking about millions of dollars at stake every week. The gratifying thing is if you helped a player, let's say on Monday, Tuesday, and they put a shaft in and they won a tournament, or they put a wedge or a putter in that you helped them with, it's very gratifying on Sunday afternoon to watch them win and go, my gosh, man,
I helped that dude.
I built that putter on Monday, and he just won that tournament.
Hey, I know this is a tough question, but I'm still going to ask it. Who's the, if, you know, on top of your head, who's the coolest PGA guy that you've worked with?
John Daly is a character in himself, man. He is the coolest guy. He will give you the shirt off his back. If he likes you, he'll do anything for you.
He comes down to your shop, doesn't he?
He hasn't been in a while. I don't think he's needed me, but, you know, when he does need me, he does come in and I'll build stuff for him. But, you know, he's also got the trucks, you know. I mean, I don't see Brittany Lincecum hardly anymore, you know, because she gets everything done out on the trucks. But the nice thing is that they know, hey, I'm here if they need something. You know, I just had MJ McGuire, who's a local here, him and his brother Jack. MJ was just in. He just left for the Asian tour. And I worked with him, you know, for half a day working on gapping his irons and changing the lofts and setting everything up and getting the swing weights correct because he's sponsored by Strixon. And they just sent him a brand new set of irons. So we spent, you know, 4 hours tweaking that stuff.
I know you can't say on the air, but are there manufacturers when somebody brings their line of clubs in that you'd prefer not to see versus others?
No, I'll work with any equipment. You know, I mean, I'm not biased to one product or another. You know, for many years, when I won National Club Fitter of the Year for TaylorMade twice, I got a lot of press in Golf Magazine, Golf Digest, a lot of magazines. I was on the internet doing interviews. I was ESPN Japan interviewed me, and it was nice, but it also stereotyped me. Oh, well, you know, he only fits TaylorMade at a shop. And that wasn't the case. I have seven brands that I fit for. I fit Callaway, Mizuno, TaylorMade, Titleist, Wilson, Ping, and Cobra. But for a while there, I was pigeonholed that, oh, you know, he only fits TaylorMade. But, you know, that's, you have to take that with the good. You know, I mean, I love everybody at TaylorMade. They were very good for me. They helped elevate my business and my credibility in the golfing industry. And I'm indebted to those guys for that.
Hey, John, you got any other
Bobby,
questions?
Bobby, I wanted to share something with you. So next week's guest is a gentleman that for 24 years has been out on the tour of one of the golf companies there. And I was his college golf coach in my previous life. And he's 24 years out on the tour working for Cleveland Golf. His name's Rob Waters. And we were just talking last night about next week's show he's going to be on. And it's really fascinating to hear you talk about how this goes. And we'll have plenty of good questions for him next week because I can see where it's a pressure cooker, these golf companies, you know, and I see it every time I go to a PGA Tour event earlier in the week. You know, they're all out there in the putting green and the range and this, that, and the other. They're, you know, and so you're right. You know, if a player takes a golf club and gets out there and wins a tournament with it, it's invaluable. But also the competition, because everybody's got a contract. They've got contract for putter, wedge, you know, bag, visor.
We call it the Wild Wild West era. When we get to late August, September, out on the tour, when everybody knows when someone's contract's getting ready to be, you know, coming up. That's when every manufacturer is like, hey, can we borrow your clubs for an hour? We want to spec all your clubs. We're going to build you something. Or the shaft manufacturers are out there on the range going, hey, I want to build you a shaft. Try this in a driver. Or, you know, because it's big business, you know, and everybody wants to be on the Daryl survey every week. And they want the numbers, because the Daryl survey does help them sell equipment to the consumer. You know, it's a big money machine that rolls right down the road.
Speaking of big money, I got a question here regarding having the PGA players represent the respective products, you know, from the Tiger Woods to up and comers. Do you think that consumers pay that much attention? I know they do to anything Tiger Woods uses.
Yes.
So the, hundreds of millions of dollars they're spending that on those campaigns
do pay off. Great example. When Jose Miguel Alfabo won the Masters, I think it was like 97, UST, United Sports Technology Shaft Company, came out with that gold and purple Lakers shaft, the Pro Force Gold. Now, I had I had 24 of those shafts in my shop 3 months before the Masters, right? I couldn't sell one of them to anybody. I sold all 24 within 8 weeks after the Masters. Everybody was coming to my shop going, I want that shaft. I want that shaft.
You know, what you want is his game. Right. That shaft's not going to make a difference. Right.
But, you know, I mean, consumers are sheep. They follow the flock. You know, and I'm excited because I know after next week, my phone's going to start ringing more because everybody gets jacked up and they're juiced up once the Masters hits.
And they see they want that equipment.
They see everybody playing that new Callaway AI smoke driver, or they see them playing that new Titleist, you know, T200 iron.
They think it's going to improve their game.
Phone's going to ring, and I'm like, sure, come right on in, man. We'll test you and see.
Hey, I'm Bobby, sure it doesn't matter what skill level you are, even as a PGA golf professional, I think I have just about every putter manufactured known to mankind in my garage right now. I remember after Jack won the Masters, he had that oversized McGregor putter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it looked like something a three-year-old would putt on a green with.
I have one.
I had to have one. I had to have it right away. And it's a great putter. And but I could see where, like, McGregor just wasn't quite ready to manufacture them in time. Yeah. Probably cost him millions of dollars in putter sales because they didn't realize that, you know, if Jack uses this putter and wins the Masters with it, you better have like, you know, 500,000 of them in the warehouse ready to ship out right away.
The mad scientist, Clay Thomas, okay, he worked for McGregor. He has his own laboratory in Carlsbad. He does a lot of prototypes, so a lot of the companies come to his little machine shop and have him run prototypes for him. He was a consultant for TaylorMade back when I was with TaylorMade. He actually designed and developed that putter that Jack won the Masters with back then.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to have to take a break. By the way, a little update on the Valero Texas Open. And Jordan Spieth, who actually, the Texan, is not playing very well. It's four over. He just jarred a par three to move two over. But just saw that live. And Batia is on top, sitting at 6 under. And let's see, any household names. Max Homa is 2 back. And I think, yeah, Roy McIlroy is 2 under as well. We'll be back. That's brought to you by our good friends at Ice Pick Vodka. We'll be back. Finish up on the tee floor with the John Rager Report and, of course, the and the weather report as well, brought to you by Yank and Craig. We'll be back on the tee floor.
18 holes never felt so good. We're on the tee from the 19th Hole Studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Ferg Sports Bar and Grill at the corner of 13th and Central across from the Trop in downtown St. Pete, serving Champa Bay for over 29 years, is your iconic headquarters to catch your favorite teams in action with over 95 televisions, 35,000 square feet to serve private parties, game watching events, concerts, and of course all the Rays, Bucks, and Lightning action along with your favorite collegiate teams. Join the party every game at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
What does Sea Dog Brewing and Shipyard Tampa Bay Tailgate have in common? Both are world-class experiences, owned by the same people. Want a great place to spend some time with friends this holiday season? The place to be is Sea Dog Treasure Island, 9610 Gulf Boulevard. Why Sea Dog, you ask? Well, it's locally owned with locally produced brew right here in Florida. It's also a place for fun, food, and drink on the coastal Blind Pass waterfront, ice pick draft drinks, Sea Dog Blue Paw, and a Mug Club rewards program. Get all this to go with a family-owned breakfast experience with homemade biscuits and more. Open 8 a.m. to late night. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com. While there, enter to win Tampa Bay tailgate tickets near Ray J for Bucks home games. Sea Dog Brewing, Treasure Island. It's where Tampa Bay family and friends go to enjoy life from breakfast to late night. 9610 Gulf Boulevard, Shipyard, Sea Dog Brewing. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're on to the next hole. And on the tee from the 19th Hole Studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Welcome back, Tampa St. Pete Sports Connections. On the tee, Florida, broadcasting live on the RadioSt.Pete.com platform and our Florida Sports Stream channel, our flagship 106.1 FM, AM 1340 up there in Clearwater. I want to thank Juan coming to the to the controls now on Thursdays. He's doing a superb job today. And Of course, we are 1 week away from the Masters. And just a little headline from today. Tiger, no sex, abstains for the Masters. Tiger Woods has taken a page out of Muhammad Ali's book. And he's been working diligently, very hard, according to his handlers. And he has sworn off sex until after the Masters. And there's two schools of thought. You got Joe Namath's strategy. He did it before the 1969 Super Bowl and said that was a recipe for success. But I think Tiger's now going to some certain extremes, and he quit dating. He's not dating until after the Masters either. So, of course, he hasn't had the best luck when it comes to love, but he made headlines with that. Big typical New York Post, big headlines.
I love
that. Tiger, no sex.
Yeah, I love that him and the ex-wife were able to be there for...
To raise the kids together.
Well, his son just won his high school championship, and they had the ring ceremony last week, and they both showed up at, you know...
And that's the way it should be, and I saw that. And bravo. Hey, by the way, John, we're talking about the Valero Texas Open. I guess we better do a little love, because we'll get a report from Adam Woodward next week. You've got the LIV down there in Miami. And, you know, you look at the participants in there, and you got five or six guys that can be making a run, you know, at the Masters in Augusta next week. So hopefully they can figure this out in the next couple of years so we don't have to deal with the division in the great game of golf. But, yeah, I'm looking at it. I'm thinking there's more potential winners looking at that LIV for next week than there is looking at the PGA as far as chalk. And who you think has an opportunity to win. I think you'd agree with me with that on, John.
Well, it's interesting because Max Homa came out today on social media and talked about that he's going to make sure that he plays the week before every major championship this year. And I think he's saying that because he wants to be in shape, he wants to be in tune, he wants to be ready to go. And that's the same philosophy that Roy McIlroy has this week, too. You know, it's windy down there and at the Valero Texas Open in San Antonio, and conditions are very similar to Augusta, you know, super hard, fast greens with a lot of undulations and things like that. So he's prepping for it. So at Trump National Doral next week, Live Golf, not next week, it's actually starts tomorrow. You know, it's a three-round thing. And they're all playing there, and there's 13 Live golfers that are going to be in the Masters this year. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be anybody's game next week at Augusta.
Well, you know, I'm just looking at the odds to win that. You got John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau. You've got Brooks Koepka right there. All three of those will be favorites.
You know, the tour stop here used to be the week before the Texas. And a lot of the players love to play Copperhead because it sets them up really well for Augusta.
Well, the thick rough.
And the hilliness. The Angeles and everything, you know, for years coming in the truck, you know, players love playing at Copperhead because
getting their game ready.
It's a great way to get your game ready for Augusta.
Well, what do we got ahead for from a weather perspective there, meteorologist John Rager?
Well, actually, it's not me. It's Wild Bill. So it's time for Wild Bill's Golf Weather Report, brought to you by Yank and Crank. Extreme fishing fashion, what golfers wear when they're fishing. Now, I'm going to do, like, two variants of this. One, I'm in St. Augustine Beach right now. It's 70 degrees, humidity's very low, gentle winds blowing in off the Atlantic Ocean. But down in San Antonio, it feels like 88 degrees down there, so it's a little warm down there in Texas at this time, even at this late hour in the day. 12%
cool
humidity and wind southwest 6 miles per hour. So it is going to be interesting that if the wind blows at Augusta next week, the folks that were warming up and get ready for the Masters, they're in the field this week at the Texas Valero Open. We're going to be well-prepped and ready to go. So there you have it, Wild Bill's Golf Weather Report, brought to you by Yank and Crank. Go to yankandcrank.myshopify.com and buy a hat.
We need some swag down here. Tell that to Wild Bill. We need some more swag down here at the 19th hole. Hey,
yeah, we're running out. Everybody loves those hats. I mean, I tell you what, you may want to, you know, or listeners out there, you may want to go buy one of these hats because it's pretty cool. And even if you don't fish, it's a cool hat to wear because if you see a hat on your head cool. like that, they know you're a fisherman, even if you aren't.
All that hats that he gave out last year, people loved. In fact, they loved all of his stuff. Hey, I know you want to do a John Rager report, but I do also want to get predictions from Bobby and myself and you for next week on who's going to be putting on the green jacket. And for clarification, they only get one jacket.
Right.
As my buddy Michael Ferd. I think he thinks I'm a dunce because I am such a hack, but I did know that for a fact. I always enjoy watching the late night shows the week after the Masters, because they always have the winners, you know, and they've got the green jacket and they've been drinking for two straight days. Some of them reveling in their success. So the green jacket has probably been to some interesting places over the years.
Sure. Absolutely.
Some places I can't even describe. I guarantee you the people at Augusta are aware of that, but they'd probably be appalled, John, some of the places these golfers have taken the fabled green jacket.
Well, you had Phil Mickelson driving through Wendy's takeout window there wearing his green jacket for the first time he won it.
Well, also, last year, Scotty went to Waffle House.
Oh, he did, didn't he? Yeah. Yeah. He's a good old boy wearing a green jacket. And people didn't know him. Like, what? That's an ugly looking jacket. What's he got that on for?
Yeah.
Hey, well, Mike, let me lead off on who are the betting favorites for the Masters next week, because it seems like the folks out in Vegas seem to have a pretty good handle on it. You got to follow the money. So obviously, Scottie Scheffler is number one favorite at 4-1 odds. Rory McIlroy, 10-1 odds, and even though he's not playing well this week, still 10-1 odds. John Rahm, defending champion, 12-1. Victor Hovland, 20-1. Jordan Spieth, 20-1. Brooks Koepka, 20-1. So if you start looking at the Vegas odds, and it's going to change 17 times since Sunday, coming up to this Sunday, you're going to have a lot of different odds changes and stuff like that. But it's interesting to see.
Cameron Smith anywhere in that?
He's in there. And if you want to go down the list a little bit, I'm sure he's in there. And but you got to go way, way down to find Cameron. But you know what? He might be the underdog. He might be that golfer that comes through and makes a run at the Masters this year.
He cut the mullet off, man. He might have been Samson and lost his strength now.
Was that not that wasn't an April Fool's joke?
No, I guess he really cut the mullet off, man. I liked the mullet. I thought it was great.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's him. But, yeah, I thought maybe that was an April Fool's joke. Yeah, well, he certainly could be one of those favorites. And DJ Dustin Johnson, out of the old guys, who do you think is going to finish higher, Phil Mickelson or Tiger Woods?
Oh, I think Phil Mickelson would do better than Tiger Woods. Yeah, Tiger, I mean, I'm rooting for Tiger. He's 48 years old, though, and he hasn't shown the ability this year to be competitive. And he may prove us all wrong, okay? But one of the things is, and we were talking about these golfers playing golf the week in a tournament before the Masters. Yeah, Tiger, you know, to be a competitive golfer, to be in contention on the PGA Tour, frequency is very important. You have to work your way into it. You just can't go cold into it and expect that you're going to go win the Masters. So I'm not sure if Tiger's going to be ready from a frequency standpoint. I mean, mentally, and you know, he's there. But I'm not sure if he physically can do it.
Yeah, but you never want to take him out, you know? I mean, he's Tiger Woods. I mean,
I would just like to see him have one hell of a round.
Sure.
And I think that would appease everybody that wants to see him potentially come back.
Certainly would make everybody, the ratings go up.
Oh, well.
Anytime that he plays in a tournament, the ratings go up.
Without a shadow of a doubt. So who are you going with this weekend, next weekend? Scotty?
Well, yeah, I'd be talking to Bobby now because I already threw the odds out there. Bobby, who do you think?
Well, you know, I like to say I think Brooks. That's who I'm going with. I think, you know, he's my dark horse, but, you know, he pulls stuff off sometimes that's just amazing, and I'm rooting for him. You know, I love DJ, but, yeah, I have to go with Brooks this year. I mean, obviously everyone's going to go with Scotty, but I would say my pick is going to be Brooks.
I would like to see Scotty repeat, but I do think that the guy that will repeat is John Rahm.
Yeah. Yeah, he might. That kid can hit the ball.
Well, and I think he's got something to prove to people. I think that'll be some motivation. And we've seen him in the past when people started minimizing his game. John Rahm is a gamer. I mean, he is one of those guys, very, very competitive, and doesn't choke when he's trying to make a statement.
Well, one thing you want to look at too this week, I watched on social media on X. It was Phil Mickelson talking about his experience with the Masters and the subtle things you need to know. And so, unlike other major championships, this is one that there are horses for courses, and that's why you see a lot of repeat champions out there, because they know the subtleties of the golf course. And Phil, you know, doesn't mind sharing, you know, with other players what he thinks it is, but he is left-handed. So like he and Bubba Watson, past champions that will be in the field this week, play the golf course a little differently than the other right-handed players, but there's a lot of subtleties out there. So, you know, when you start looking at that, it's very difficult for a rookie to win. Rookies have won in the past, like, you know, Fuzzy Zeller, first time he played the Masters, he won it, okay? But in this day and age, I think that you're going to have a little bit of experience, and I think the edge goes to the veterans, the folks that have won the Masters before or have contended in the past.
Hey, I want to do a shout-out to a young man that has joined us from time to time. My son Michael's listened up in Iowa, and a shout-out to my granddaughter who turned 4 yesterday.
Happy
birthday to Harper, and we need Michael to get a golf club in her hand, and of course...
bring her down, I'll fit her.
And Jack, yeah, bring her down, and fit her, and then we'll have John give some lessons, or maybe Billy Butner when they come down here. So what do you got planned this weekend there, my friend?
Well, this weekend, I'm actually just trying to get ready for the Masters. In fact, I'm getting ready to go to the grocery store. Well, we got March Madness, but I'm getting ready to go to the grocery store. I saw on Golf Digest that Dustin Johnson actually did a recipe for the pimento cheese that they serve at Augusta, and he had the exact recipe, and there he is himself making the pimento cheese. So I'm going to take all those ingredients and give it a shot myself and see what I can come up with.
Well, send that to me, because I might have the cooks here at Ferg's mix some up for us, so we can have some fun next week as well, and we'll have some libations from Patty Suzette, our cart girl, for the event. You a March Madness guy? You'll be watching.
I don't really follow basketball. I'm more of a baseball. I love college football and I love college baseball.
You're a baseball junkie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you got plenty to watch, and yeah, of course, the Rays, a nice homestand this past week. And I'll be watching a little of this Valero Texas Open. Zach won in 2008, 2009. I don't see him on the leaderboard any longer, but if he can make a move, that would be a lot of fun for us Iowans. We got plenty to be happy about with Caitlin Clark on Friday night as she takes on the opportunity to go to the Final Four. And I'm looking forward to watching that. And then, of course, next week, it's Masters all week long, John, in the par 3. I'm looking forward to watching that. It's always one of my favorites.
Hey, I know we're running out of time at the end of the broadcast here, but just not going to go ahead and do a John Rager report, but I do want to make mention, this is what my report was going to be on, is the Drive, Chip, and Putt.
I don't think 8 a.m.
on the Golf Channel, Augusta National, Drive, Chip, and Putt. You need to watch that. It's probably one of the greatest grassroots golf programs in America right now, and you watch these kids play. They're the 80 competitors in different age groups.
I got to wind it down. From the Ferg's 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios, I'm Mike Ricker, John Rager, Ward Clayton, Tom Gribben, Michael Ferg, Bobby Van Sweden, Joe Boudreau, Juan on the controls. Thanks for listening. Down the tee, Florida. God bless you. God bless America. Remember to keep it in the short grass and hit them straight.